All right, as a continuation of part two of Galatians, we have completed, this is 2B, we already did 2A, so we're going to pick it up back at Galatians chapter 1, verse 6. We're going to talk about what was going on, the state of affairs in Galatia. So I am now showing you on the screen chapter 1 and verse 6. Now, we're going to look at this, so I'm just going to read a few verses. So, and then we're going to come back to 6. Okay, here we go. I'm astonished that you are so quickly deserting the one who called you by the grace of Christ and are turning to a different good news. Not that there is another good news, but there are some who are trying to confuse you and want to pervert the good news of the Messiah. But even if we or an angel from heaven, that's pretty high up, should preach a good news at odds with the one we have already preached to you, let them be cursed. As we have said before, and now I say again, if anyone is preaching to you a good news at odds with the one you have already received, let them be cursed. All right, so, what was Paul really trying to say? I'm going to tell you exactly what they are. But before I do, I just want to see what you all have to say.
Put a double curse on them.
Yeah, and even if you're an angel, curse that angel too. This is some strong words.
Yeah.
Strong words indeed. All right, so, how many people can recite Galatians 3:28 from memory? I'll start it. There is neither Jew nor Greek, male or female, free or slave. Anybody remember that passage?
Talking about circumcision?
No, talking about within the assembly. Status within the assembly. Okay, what was going on at that time period?
3:28.
Let's think about Judaism as we understand it. Going back to the destruction of the first temple, there's disobedience. Lots of disobedience. So they had to go visit Babylon for a long time. They got out, came out, built a temple. At some point in time, they started an educational plan called the synagogue. And we found synagogues that date back 200 or 300 BC. They dug them out of the ground. They've taken pictures of how they were decorated and the things that were painted and blah, blah, blah. Okay? So we know that they've been running an educational program for a while. So, if you want to deal with people not following the instructions, what better way to do it than to be able to teach them what the Torah says, and then they'll know, and then they can go do it. So, if you want to have people who are outside of Israel, because the people who are inside Israel, if the commandments are being kept, what does the text say? Parents, teach your children in the way that they should go. So if you're doing that, when you rise, when you sleep, when you walk, these are all similes for when the opportunity presents itself to make it a learning lesson for your children as they are learning to adult. Do it. Do it. So, if we're doing that, then we're not talking about that problem. We're talking about, you got people coming in who haven't done that. So now what are you going to do? Well, are we just going to let them in? Oh, we can't do that. That'll be a disaster. Because they'll have no clue what they'll have to do. They'll be up there. They'll be polluting the temple. One of the temple guards will kill them. And it's going to be really ugly. So they came up with a plan. What we're going to do is we're going to have them come in and we're going to teach them the stuff. They'll have a chance to experience every feast except Passover, and then eventually they'll reach a point where they'll take a final exam, and then once they pass the final exam, if they are female, they'll get mikvahed, and if they are male, they'll get mikvahed and circumcised. And then we'll call them proselyte. All right? Thoughts on the matter?
And when are you saying this was?
3 centuries before the time of Christ. Now, I'm not saying everything was in place immediately. First, the concept of synagogue had to be developed. Then synagogues had to be built. If you look at the archaeological side of it, you'll see a lot of synagogues were built and paid for by Gentiles. And they have the record of the names carved into stone. And those have been found. So this was something that was going on. And it continued once we get past from BC to AD. Once we moved past, there were still synagogues and stuff was being built and things were going on. And that's a whole other discussion. So my point is, the concept is a good concept. Come on in. Let's apply it to today. Jaden is of age, and he says, "You know, man, I want to drive. Oh, here's the keys." Nobody does that. They have to take a written test of some type. Then they get to begin to learn. Then they have to have an adult while they're learning. Then they have to come back and take another test. Then they have to do a driving test. This is how I remember it from when I got my license. That was a while back. Could have changed. There's a process before they issue you a license. So there's a process before they issue covenant membership within Judaism. It's a great idea. You know, everybody is, except Passover, everybody's done everything. So you know how to do it. So this is good stuff. All right?
Yeah, but Yahweh to give them instruction, that's a man-made thing. They're making
rules. Exactly. All right. So it's a great idea. It's just not the way it was laid out. Because you'll notice that Rahab didn't have to do that. And we're not even going to talk about that fellow who was second to the king, Naaman. But
she was brought into the community. She didn't bring her pigs with her.
Probably not.
She did learn as she mingled with and lived with the community. She was far outnumbered, and she had to do what they did. Bringing the Gentiles in is a whole different story.
Some differences.
I mean, the big thing about table fellowship.
That's true. Gentiles have a history. It's not good in the eyes of the Jew. And there was concern about becoming defiled, which impacts your temple stuff. So you had to be careful. So I get it. You're right.
But where Paul was, there were a long ways from the temple.
Oh, that's true. That's true. So where am I going? I'll get there. You know how I am. I like to just take these journeys. All right, so new regime now, remnant covenant, Yeshua's ecclesia, Matthew 16. So as time progressed from the early synagogue plan, what happened? The traditions of the elders began to be intertwined with written instructions. To the point where by the time you get to the time of Yeshua, they were one and the same. You see that in many examples. The only example I'm going to give you is Acts 10. There's two examples in Acts 10. The first example is, it says, the Spirit spoke to Peter and said, what did the Spirit say? He said, just do it. right? That's where Naki got that from. Just want to let you know, I think. Anyway, the Spirit of God was operating to communicate to Peter what needed to be done. It was recognized by the host of heaven that Peter wasn't going to do it. So he was told, just do it and don't ask any questions. If you go back and read the text.
Are we talking about when he was supposed to go to the...
Yes. Yes.
But he's like, don't call what God has said is clean, unclean.
Yeah, that's later. Okay. So, he goes. He gets there, they all bow down. That's nice. He's all upset. He says, you realize it's against the law for me to be here. No, it's not. It's an oral tradition. It is not a Torah instruction that you can go and share. What does be a light to the nations mean? If they have a question, you give them an answer. If they pray to God, which this Roman official who was part of a cohort, I don't know how many troops were under him, centurion, something like that, who was praying to God, and God said, I'm going to answer the prayer. I am going to send somebody there to answer all your questions. That's outside the scope. What happened was, he said, it's against the law. It's not against the law. The oral tradition was part of the law as the Jews understood it. This is a problem. We all know this problem. That doesn't mean everything in the oral tradition is wrong. I've got a list of a dozen, and I haven't finished my research of things where Yeshua bought onto the oral tradition during the time he was alive, right out of the Gospels. I see it. So it's not that everything is wrong. It's that some things are wrong. And one of the big things that was wrong was what I'm talking about here with this proselyte event. Now, once again, I say it's kind of cool that a person can learn to drive before you give them a license and give them a car and put them on the road. It's kind of nice if a person can learn to walk correctly, but that's not how God has planned. God does not have it planned that way, so you don't go through that test. But once the oral tradition gets connected to the written law, then you take on other stuff. And we're going to see that. I'm going to show you the passages that talk about that. So, going back to Galatians' problem, he has come in there. His good news is God has called you, and you can receive, by grace, the Spirit to be changed, which is part of the fulfillment of the renewal of the covenant that Jeremiah spoke about. You only can get the Spirit if you go through Yeshua. So, they've got that. The text is talking about there. The one who called you by grace, and you're turning to a different good news. But why would they be doing that? They have already heard this. They're excited. They're apart. They've received the Spirit. The Spirit's beginning to work. And now suddenly something else is going on? What was the situation? The situation was the Gentiles were second-class citizens because they had not become a Jew. So, you're in the community, a mixed community of Jews and Gentiles, and you want to be a part, but they're not going to let you be a part because you're not a proselyte. So, you're a second-class citizen. But somebody else comes along, missionary number two, and says, oh, let me give you some good news. All you have to do is go through the proselyte ceremony, and you're a first-class citizen like the rest of us. And they're like, really? This is great. And that gets reported back to Paul. Now, on its face, that sounds pretty cool. What's the problem with it? Besides your answer, which is true, the other problem is that when you take on the proselyte ceremony, you swear an oath to follow the rabbis as your master and all of their oral traditions. By the way, some of the oral traditions, there's no forgiveness if you violate them. So you lose your access to the age to come. That's in the Talmud. Okay? So, they are ready to do this because they see that as the only way to be able to get equal status standing in the community, because the Jews only know one way to do this. Proselyte. We've been doing it for centuries. What's not to like? And now there's a change. And see, these people, those people who are not part of the cup, they're not accessing the Spirit, the indwelling Spirit. And that becomes another problem, yes.
How is this different from what they were saying in Acts 15?
You're getting ahead of me. I'm coming to it. I'm coming to it. So, here are some problems. I wrote down a short list of problems. First of all, who's your master, Yeshua or the rabbis? But if you go through the proselyte event, Yeshua is not your master anymore. Okay? And I'm going to show you that. Now, what did I say when I said how many people remember Galatians 3:28? Why do you think Paul wrote that? He was saying that whether you are a Jew or a Gentile, we're all one in Christ. Because the Gentiles were not. That's why he said it. So, what else happens in the proselyte piece? Who is the person God authorized to interpret how to walk Torah? Yeshua, the rabbis. Take the proselyte event. You now take a note that the rabbis are going to be the ones who interpret the text for you. That's a problem. And I'm going to show you that. Paul mentions this problem in Galatians 5. We're going to go to it in just a second. All right, next. Where all the oral traditions are in play, there's so many things that violate Torah. But now you have to obey those because you've taken an oath to obey them. That's a problem. And the biggest problem of all, maybe, in my opinion, the biggest problem of all is no access to the Spirit. Because the Spirit only comes through Yeshua, because he's the one who walked the path, paid the price. God has now provided his Spirit to Yeshua, who can now distribute it to all the people. Remember 1 Corinthians 15, starting like maybe 20 to 28, it says, when Christ comes, then those who are his are the ones who come up in the next resurrection. Those who are his. So there is a connection there. Now, how does Paul address that? I've given you some examples. We're going to look at one of them in Galatians. Let's go to 5. Here we go. Christ has set us free. Stand firm, therefore. This is a conclusion, concluding statement. Do not be subject again to a yoke of slavery. What could a yoke of slavery be? What did Yeshua say? My yoke?
Light.
So what is he talking about? It must be a contrast here. Somebody else's yoke ain't light. Ain't light. Okay? Exactly. Listen, I, Paul, tell you, if you agree to the proselyte event, Christ is no benefit to you. Because you just gave away his authority to interpret. You gave away access to the Spirit. You gave away grace as being part of the remnant covenant. And the list goes on. So if you agree to the proselyte event, Christ is no benefit to you. Furthermore, I declare to every man who agrees to go through that event that he's obligated to obey the entire... What did I just say? You have the oral tradition, you have the written, you have to obey all of it because you just took an oath to obey all of it. You have cut yourself off from Christ and you have fallen away from grace. That's pretty strong words. Pretty strong, you know? All right, so there you go. That's an example. That's just one example in Galatians. There's others. Okay, so before I finish here, there's some other things you need to see, just so, you know, there's no doubts here what I'm talking about. Let's go to Ephesians 2. This is a very interesting passage that I'm going to read you here. In Ephesians 2, starting at 11, Excuse me. Here's what we have. So remember, you got to tell me who he's talking to now. Remember that at one time you were Gentiles in the flesh. Who's he talking about? Jews or Gentiles? He's talking about Gentiles. You were Gentiles in the flesh. You were called uncircumcised by those who are Jews, who are circumcised. Okay? Remember. So now there's a transition here. This is a time flux here. Because if you're being told to remember something, that means you got to reflect back in time to a previous state that is not the current state. All right, so what does it say? Remember that at that time you were apart from Christ, one, excluded from the commonwealth of Israel, two, strangers to the covenants, talking covenants, three, you have no hope and you're without God in the world. That's five. That's some big stuff there. All right, but we haven't got to what's important yet in this passage. 13, but now you who were at one time far away have come near. So that is a change of status. All right, still it's not where we need to be. 14, he's our peace. Ah, we're getting warm now. Who has made us one, not first class, second class, made us one class, has broken down a dividing wall. A dividing wall. There's something, there's like a wall that is dividing the first class from the second class. There's a wall there that's dividing those two groups. But the word in the KJV is abolished. But that's really, I don't know if that's the best word. What the Greek word means, there was something that had impact as far as law goes. And if you were to now get a stamp and go null and void, that law has no more impact. And that's what the word means within the Roman use of Greek in that time period. Now, we're not going to extend that study, but I'm just giving it to you. So let's follow this here. He has broken down the dividing wall, whatever that is. He's going to define it in a moment. He's abolished. He has removed its ability to function as a law by what he did when he died. Now look at 15, the key. The law of commandments that are contained in man-made writings, the oral tradition, so that he could create in himself one new man from two, making peace and reconciling those groups to God in one body. So that particular aspect of the oral tradition, in effect, in the first century, was, what should I say? Was made null and void. So being able to have a separation, that wall of division, because the oral tradition said that it has to be there, now you don't have to do that anymore because he did away with it. It's now gone. It has no more function. And so now we can just sail right in. All right, thoughts and comments?
Yes.
Yes. Right, but here's the problem. There's multiple problems, but here's the key problem. In the Greek, and you can see it up here, and I'm going to take my mouse and move it over here. Yeah, I have it. You see how I'm highlighting that? The law of commandments and ordinances is sometimes how it reads. They see law of commandments as the commandments of God that have been abolished or made null and void. But the problem is that dogma is never used of Torah in Torah writings and prophets because it's always something that is man-authored and man-made. It's never something that God wrote or said. So this can't be the law of God. Did the oral tradition have commandments? It absolutely did. Was it considered law by the Jews in the first century? It absolutely was. But it's that's why the third word is there. It was a law, and it had commandments, and they were created by the rabbis. Yes?
And that's the same word that when it says the law was nailed to the cross, mm-hmm. it's dogma.
Oh,
isn't that right?
I'd have to look it up. Is that the Colossians piece? I'll dash over there. There it is, right there, 14. It's canceled the certificate of death with its legal dogma.
What chapter is that?
2 and 14. He's taking that away, nailing it to the cross, is the end of verse 14. So that's what she was bringing up. All right, so do you see that we have a problem with this? But I'm not finished yet. I got another passage that you need to see. All right, so let's go to Acts 15 so that I can finish this. My mouse is...
You need more watermelon?
I'm out of watermelon, so I don't know if I can function the rest of this presentation, but... I am out.
I'm going to get you something.
I'm going to try to make it for 5 more minutes. Okay. We are at Acts 15, verse 1. What does it say? Some men came down from Judea and began to teach, unless you go through the proselytize event, you cannot be saved or you cannot become part of the covenant. That's what they knew. It's nothing bad here. These are believers, as you're going to see in the next verse. These are believers who have believed that Yeshua is the Messiah, pushing back against the rest of Judaism in the first century. Let's go to verse 5. It says, but some arose from the party of the Pharisees, believers. It is necessary for them to experience the proselytize event. So there you go. So what does Peter say about this problem? He says his comment in 10. So now, why are you attempting to test God by putting a yoke on the neck of the Gentiles coming in, which neither our ancestors nor we have been able to bear, the oral tradition yoke, not Yeshua's, my burden is light, but this here. Why are you trying to tempt God, which you know you're not supposed to do, by putting a yoke on them requiring the proselyte event? So here it is, Acts 15, 1, 5, 10. Blows it right out of the water right there. So you can see this is not, I'm not showing you something that is a single event. I'm showing you scattered through where not only is it talking about the event, but it's talking about how the event has no more authority going forward. So that's another example. So that's what I have on Galatians chapter 1 today. All right. Any other questions, comments before I shut it down? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, on that Acts 15.
I'm there.
Where it says, and command them to keep the law of Moses.
Yes, but for them the law of Moses was the oral tradition that Moses received on Mount Sinai but never wrote down. Anybody who's supporting the proselyte event would be somebody who believes that the oral tradition is part of the law of Moses.
So if you see the law of Moses, that's not the commandments of God, that's the oral tradition.
It's a mix of the law of Moses and the oral tradition together, because in the first century they thought they were one. This is what throws a lot of Christians off. They don't realize that. It's important. And just because we did talk about the save thing, so let me just say what Peter says as we continue. In 8, Who's speaking here before? Peter stood up. He talks about how he had the message to the Gentiles to start. God knows the heart, confirmed by the Spirit. No distinction. Cleanse the hearts by faith. No distinction between us and them, cleansing their hearts by faith. He's lumping, instead of the Gentiles rising up to first class, because we have first class Jews, second class Gentiles, now we're getting rid of that whole class system, and it's, we're all the same way. But Peter's not done. He says that, and then he says this. We just read 10. Through the grace of the Messiah Yeshua, we believed that we will be saved in the same way as them. All right, now let's translate that into English. But through the grace of Messiah Yeshua, we believe that we can enter into this covenant in the same way that they can enter into this covenant. And now the whole thing looks different.
You know, I don't have a problem with that. And I fully understand, you know, the whole thing about, you know, how they were attempting to use the circumcision, you know, as a means to enter the covenant. I mean, I understand all that background. You know, I understand, you know, the whole thing, you know, with the oath and, you know, taking on the oral traditions and all that. I get that. I understand that. But yet, at the same time, it clearly says in Leviticus, I think it is, that they were supposed to circumcise their children on the eighth day. So it's part of the Torah.
Oh, 100%.
You know?
I'm not talking about circumcision.
Well, I mean, I understand that. But what frustrates, and not only that, but when there is a future temple, no one will be allowed to enter that temple if they are a male, if they are not circumcised both in the flesh and in the heart.
So that would apply to the females too. They can't enter the temple unless they're circumcised in the heart.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's pretty major.
So because of that, I experience a level of frustration because I know that the males should be physically circumcised.
Yeah.
Not to enter into the covenant.
It's not a salvation issue.
It's not a salvation issue. It's a separate issue.
It's a commandment issue.
Yeah, it's a commandment issue. And they were not telling them, they weren't emphasizing that, you know, alongside this.
Well, not in this particular text.
No. And then not even in the church fathers.
Yes, I mean, they are.
The church fathers are saying, you do not circumcise, you do not do the Sabbath, you do not do the feast. They say it over and over.
And yet the Gentile assembly still did. Because I have a writing from the 3rd century, early 3rd century, which says, we don't circumcise our children the way they do in Asia.
Yeah, well, they were doing it, you know, they weren't doing it in some areas and they were in others.
So those people, those assemblies talked about in Revelation that John went to Ephesus at the beginning of the 2nd century, they were continuing to obey the commandments. Some of the breakaway places, and especially Rome, were starting to move away. And so that's why you have that breakdown.
But, you know, as I read the church fathers, I see it over and over again.
For sure.
Do not do this. Do not do this. Do not do this.
But it doesn't even end in the 3rd century. Even in the 4th century, the Christians are still going to the synagogue to process their oaths and vows and are getting ripped for it in Sunday service. I have that writing too. Yeah. It's just a matter of being informed about what was going on and where.
So in a sense, in some places in the scriptures, what Paul's talking about, it's really a figure of speech. He's using circumcision as a figure of speech to mean going through the proselyte process.
Yes.
So you can substitute that, take out circumcision and substitute that, and then you get a clearer picture of what's going
on. Exactly. And here's the example that I always give when somebody asks me about this. I quote Galatians 5. Paul says, if you get circumcised, and I don't tell them what that means, I said, the text says, if you get circumcised, you are cut off from Christ. So right after the Jerusalem Council, what did Paul do? He took his best friend and had him circumcised so he would be cut off from Christ. And they go, what? And they then, it, you know, have you ever played one of those old pinball machines and it goes, tilt? Because they can't process that. Because then they realize, well, it can't mean that. You're right. It doesn't mean that. So, yeah,
so
figures of speech are a killer. Yes. So that's what I wanted to do today, was to show you that what's going on in Galatians eventually gets addressed in Acts. And Ephesians talks about the legal side of it. I mean, all these different things are talking about the same thing, just saying different perspective of it.
But you can't get a Christian to understand that.
I have found it very difficult. Some Christian scholars will see it. The ears to hear thing is probably a very important part of this.
I know that
the Spirit says those who have the ear to hear, hear.
But it's just like I can certainly see how it has happened as I'm reading the church fathers and they're repeatedly telling these people, do not do these things.
Yeah.
You know.
So what were the things that you wrote down that Judaism does that's right?
I have a list at home. I'll be going through that when I go back to my first century. What it is that, here's what I'm saying. There were certain traditions on the books that Yeshua did not speak against. And actually, it looked like it was walked out. So, and then there are other things which he quotes as though you would think they were scripture. And they are not in the scriptures at all. They're strictly an oral tradition that he used to make a point. I have a list. I know you're interested. All right, so we good? This is the end of Galatians chapter 1. Now we get into the meat of the subject in chapter 2. All right, thank you.